This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
More bad news for Hillary. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Thursday, August 11. Welcome aboard. Here's what's up this hour.
Newly released emails from Hillary Clinton's private server provide examples of how the Clinton Foundation appeared to try to influence the State Department.
The presidential election campaign now appears to be about who is sitting behind the candidates during their speeches. A new example emerged yesterday.
And sports, football will try to steal viewers from the Olympics. There are six preseason NFL games on tap tonight.
And on the employment front, a list of the most dangerous jobs in America.
You know, when you're working in an environment with prisons, correctional facilities, you take on a lot of risk that isn't necessarily as spotlighted, I guess, as you could say about police officers also there in law enforcement. So that kind of jumped out at me.
Kyle Kensing at CareerCast.com has a list of America's most dangerous jobs. He's here in about 20 minutes. Well, a watchdog group has released nearly 300 pages of emails from former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's personal server, including many exchanges that were not handed over to the government as part of her archive. Remember, she said she handed over all work-related emails. The new emails released by the group Judicial Watch offer fresh examples of how top Clinton Foundation officials sought access to the State Department during Mrs. Clinton's tenure. State Department spokeswoman Elizabeth Trudeau.
Nearly 55,000 pages of former Secretary Clinton's emails released by the department over the past year give a sense of the wide range of individuals, both inside and outside government, that State Department officials are in contact with on a range of subjects.
She only talked about the emails handed over by Mrs. Clinton. In an exchange from 2009, by the way, an aide to Bill Clinton told three of Mrs. Clinton's top advisors that it was important to take care of a particular person whose name had been redacted from the document. That person had written the aide, Doug Band, under the subject line, a favor. Mr. Band was a chief advisor in helping Mr. Clinton launch the Clinton Foundation after leaving the White House. In a separate exchange, Mr. Band asked Mrs. Clinton's confidant, Huma Abedin, and Cheryl Mills, another top aide to Mrs. Clinton, to set up a meeting between a State Department official and a top donor to the Clinton Foundation. Conflicting reports in the media about Donald Trump. CNN is reporting that a U.S. Secret Service official has spoken to the Trump campaign regarding his Second Amendment comments. But Reuters reported that no such conversation occurred. CNN did not name its source. The controversy erupted Tuesday afternoon when Mr. Trump said at a rally that Second Amendment defenders might be able to stop Mrs. Clinton from appointing justices to the Supreme Court who could weaken gun rights. He mentioned the dust-up during remarks yesterday in Fort Lauderdale.
And look at the way they covered that story yesterday. Was that disgusting? Was that disgusting? And by the way, we have our Second Amendment. We need our Second Amendment protected.
Mr. Trump said he was simply trying to unify gun owners against Mrs. Clinton in the voting booth. His supporters yesterday tried to dismiss the controversy, saying either that Mr. Trump was joking or the Democrats and the media were spinning it into something bigger than it was. Some are calling it another missed opportunity. Some observers feel the recent stories involving presidential candidate Donald Trump are just that. Instead of focusing on the fact that a Taliban supporter and man who denounced gays had attended a Hillary Clinton rally, or that Mrs. Clinton had campaigned for ousted DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, or was the subject of a new email release showing overlaps between the Clinton Foundation and the State Department, Mr. Trump ignited a new firestorm with a comment that seemed to suggest violence or rebellion by gun rights activists against his political opponent. It's a story from Caitlin Huey Burns, national political reporter at Real Clear Politics. Caitlin, what do we have?
Well, remember in the beginning of the week, which is not too long ago, Trump was supposed to reset his campaign after a series of stumbles that he inflicted upon himself, really, since the end of the Republican convention. And over the course of those stumbles, you saw his numbers really slide in the polls nationally and in key battleground states. So he was attempting to reset his campaign on Monday with a speech at the Detroit Economic Club talking about his economic vision for the future. And it wasn't more than 24 hours later, really, that he stumbled into new controversy, talking about something that many say suggested violence. He talked about if Hillary Clinton were elected, that what that would do to the Supreme Court. And he said, you know, that Second Amendment people, you can't do anything about it, but maybe the Second Amendment people might be able to do that. Yeah. And so that was construed as suggesting violence towards the nominee. Now, the Trump campaign, of course, says that they were talking about political things that the NRA and gun rights advocates could do in terms of influencing decisions. He was talking about, you know, the political uprising, not a violent one. But you can see how this is something of a pattern where Trump says something controversial, doesn't quite define exactly what he meant until later when the campaign has to put out statements. And Trump then, of course, blames the media for taking the comments out of context. This is a tricky situation, and it comes as Republicans are really, again, hoping that Trump would turn the page on his campaign.
Yeah. We're speaking with Caitlin Huey Burns, national political reporter at Real Clear Politics. Her piece is called Trump and the Art of the Squander. All right, so Mike Pence, his running mate, also taking a page from that Clinton book, blaming folks like you and me, saying we're just sort of concocting these things on a daily basis. So does he have a point here?
Right. Well, Pence has also had to defend Donald Trump nearly at every turn since becoming the official vice presidential candidate. And Trump has a few other surrogates out on the campaign trail with him. Rudy Giuliani was campaigning with him in Wilmington, North Carolina on Tuesday. And Giuliani, of course, the former mayor of New York City, made the rounds on some television networks on Wednesday morning defending Trump's statements. And so he's also had surrogates on various other networks and in other media trying to defend the statements. And of course, saying that the media is to blame for creating the controversy. What's important here, though, is that it deflects from some opportunities that Trump had this week, namely opportunities to go after Hillary Clinton. At Clinton's rally earlier this week in Florida, the father of the Orlando shooter was present and actually just right behind Hillary Clinton as she spoke. And the Clinton campaign didn't really respond until late in the day on Tuesday. That was an opportunity for Donald Trump to capitalize on. Also, Hillary Clinton was campaigning for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course, the former DNC chairwoman who got into a lot of heat for those DNC emails. He did not really capitalize on that. So Republicans are seeing these missteps as really missed opportunities, not only to make advances and go after Clinton, but to really unite the Republican Party.
Thanks, Caitlin. Caitlin Huey Burns, national politics reporter at Real Clear Politics. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you'd like, you can follow me directly on Twitter @GordonDeal. It's 15 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are three numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan being one of America's top 10 states for business. 2000 is the number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. That's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday. Well, this has recently become the presidential election season of please explain who's attending your rallies. First, Democrat Hillary Clinton caught flack. Now it's Republican Donald Trump. Here's this morning's Dave Duncan.
Mr. Trump slammed Ms. Clinton yesterday for allowing the father of the Orlando terrorist to sit behind her at a rally this week in Central Florida. Sadiq Mateen not only has expressed support for the Taliban, but also emphatically denounced gays. His son, as you'll recall, killed 49 people at a nightclub that caters to the gay community. However, behind Mr. Trump at a rally yesterday was former Congressman Mark Foley, who resigned 10 years ago after reports that he sent sexually explicit messages to underage teenage boys. He was never charged. Gordon?
Thank you, Dave. By the way, yesterday was not the first Trump event that Mr. Foley has attended. Says he's been a Trump fan for years. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Donald Trump is accusing President Obama of founding the Islamic State group. He made the accusation at a rally yesterday near Fort Lauderdale.
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS.
No comment from the White House. Trump has long blamed Obama and his former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton for pursuing Mideast policies that created a power vacuum in Iraq that was exploited by ISIS. A man who says he wanted an audience with Donald Trump spent 3 hours scaling the outside of Trump Tower in New York yesterday using large suction cups. He got as high as the 21st floor before police officers grabbed him and hauled him to safety through an open window. This eyewitness saw the drama unfold.
There was a gentleman, this man to our right, and he was kind of jumping up and down, extremely anxious. Didn't think much of it. And about 2 minutes later, we turned around and he was running across the side of the building.
The climber was taken to a hospital to be psychologically evaluated. The organizers of that Tennessee fair where three girls fell from a Ferris wheel kept their ride operator despite an incident across the state line that injured five and caused the owner's son to be jailed. Private inspectors believe a mechanical failure likely caused the gondola to flip over Monday, sending three girls plummeting 30 to 45 feet to the ground. A six-year-old girl suffered a traumatic brain injury in the fall. Her 10-year-old sister broke her arm. Well, for some people, it's awfully hard to get untethered from their smartphone, but you'd think in the Olympics, athletes would be able to put them down when they're competing. Not fencer Enzo Lafort. During his bout, he lost his balance and slightly hopped off the fencing strip, causing his phone to fall out of his back pocket and slide across the floor. The brief interruption was met with a mixture of boos and laughter from the crowd as he picked up the device and handed it to a man on the sidelines.
You never know when you're going to get that call.
Can you imagine?
No.
You're competing in the Olympics and you've got a phone on you.
In your pants.
What is going on?
Well, would he actually take a call?
That's what I wonder. If it rang, would he stop and stop the bout?
He's got the foil or the epi, whatever, mm-hmm. the sword in one hand and his phone in the other hand.
Checking texts. Yeah.
Telling his opponent, hang on 1 second. I got to take this. 23 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. It's easy to take workplace safety for granted, especially since the Occupational Safety and Health Administration laws protect workers. But according to a new CareerCast report, some of the most vital careers to upholding and maintaining the very fabric of American society are also among the most dangerous. Here's a list of them from Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast.com. Kyle, give us a few.
Well, one of these that kind of stood out to me the most is veterinarian was kind of an interesting one. It wasn't the top in terms of the most time lost due to injury or illness, but the fact that it ranks so highly is pretty surprising because you think of going to the vet, taking your small dog or whatever. You know, it seems like a job where you're able to help animals and you know, kind of nice, safe work. But in reality, things range from dog bites to if you work with horses or livestock being kicked by obviously huge animal.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really kind of a dangerous job, especially for those that work with the larger animals. But then, you know, in human healthcare, nursing assistant is one where you work long hours, you're exposed to people who have illnesses. So it kind of makes sense that your immune system might wear down and you would lose time on the job due to illness that way. And then, you know, obviously there are some ones that really are pretty obvious, you know, firefighter and police officer. Obviously, those are two jobs where risk and physical danger are inherent.
Yeah. Boy, going back to general care, at least a veterinarian getting paid if you're getting kicked or bit or suffering scratches, unlike a nursing assistant, right? Explain the average salaries there.
Yeah, with nursing assistant, you're looking at a not great average salary there. You know, obviously registered nurses are going to make a little bit more because they have to put in the extra schooling. So on top of being a more dangerous job, you're also looking at a lower pay there. Now, for some of these, the pay really isn't great. You know, something like a taxi driver or a truck driver, those aren't particularly high-paying jobs, and you're taking on a lot of risk as well.
We're speaking with Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast. We're looking at their list of the most dangerous jobs in America. All right, what else jumped out at you?
Correctional officer is an interesting one. Again, you're talking about law enforcement there. And that, you know, when you're working in an environment with prisons, correctional facilities, you take on a lot of risk that isn't necessarily as spotlighted, I guess, as you could say about police officers also there in law enforcement. So that kind of jumped out at me.
Yeah. All right. Construction laborer made the list, too. And although it wasn't the highest salary on the list, how about that growth outlook, 13% growth outlook for construction laborers?
Yeah, you know, construction laborer, when the housing market's starting to pick up again, and construction in general starting to pick up, and construction laborers, because that's sort of the most needed job, you know, somebody who's kind of the jack of all trades, if you will, who can kind of step in and take on a variety of duties on the construction site. Great growth outlook there for that reason. But for the same reason, a dangerous job because you're working with heavy machinery. You know, you're taking on some of the less highly trained positions on the skill site, and therefore incurring a little bit more physical risk as a result.
Thanks, Kyle. Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast.com. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
Whether traveling or working remotely, we know your PC is your business headquarters. And when work takes you on the go, you need a laptop that can keep up. Dell's XPS 13 empowers small business owners to collaborate anywhere with incredible battery life and powerful performance. Reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times faster performance when you refresh to new Dell PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Explore the XPS 13 at Dell.com/radio.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Thursday, August 11. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines, new troubling emails released about Hillary Clinton that specifically suggest pay to play. Senate candidate in Ohio says the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, quote, happened at a good time. Legal firestorm for a New York bar owner who says, my bar, my rules. Men have to be at least 30, women have to be at least 25. Actor Thomas Gibson suspended from the TV show Criminal Minds for reportedly kicking a writer. And English authorities investigating whether a junior tennis player was deliberately poisoned at Wimbledon. As we previewed for you yesterday, the Justice Department has released a scathing new report that says Baltimore police have engaged in a pattern or practice that violates the Constitution and federal anti-discrimination laws. The investigation was launched last year after Freddie Gray died in police custody. We're joined now by retired Justice Department Senior Special Agent Bobby Kimbrough Jr., who spent 30 years in law enforcement, also author of a book called Surviving the Stop. Bobby, good morning. What'd you make of this report from Justice about the Baltimore PD?
Well, good morning. Good morning. I read all 160-some-odd pages of it. I thought that it brought out some interesting points, and hopefully that the report will give the PD, the BPD, a chance to fix some things and do some things differently.
All right, like what, for example?
Like, for example, some of the reporting practices, the contact stops that they would make. They're only reporting 23 out of 123-some, when the truth of the matter in a city with about 620-some thousand people, they were engaging in several hundred thousands of stops. Enforcement activities, the way they chose to do them, unconstitutional arrests, stops without probable cause. I mean, a whole list of things that I was looking at, and I was saying, you know, that creates a culture of separation. It creates a culture of distrust in a community, and you can't function like that.
How does that even happen? How does that go on?
Well, I think what happens is when you have a culture or engaging in something, what you start to believe, a mindset that a certain group of individuals or a certain certain neighborhood is engaging in an activity, you start to, that thought process engages in an emotion, which then comes an action and an outcome. And what you have is it becomes cancerous. And if you don't address it, you'll find pockets of the police department, or pockets of individuals. Not saying that the whole police department or nothing, when we talk about entirety, is bad, but when you have one or two or three or four engaging in that activity, you have to nip it, because if you don't, it becomes cancerous.
Yeah. I've asked this question before. I'll throw it to you. Police departments have the same number, say, proportionally, of bad apples as the radio industry, teachers, right? It just, I mean, police just happen to carry guns. But wouldn't you say that, I don't know, you know, all industries have their bad apples?
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. All professions, as you say, there are people that shouldn't be there. But, you know, one of the things that some 20-something years, 30 years ago, when I first hit the streets, my training officer told me something. He said, when you pin this shield on and you check 1041, meaning you're beginning your shift, you don't represent white nor black. You represent what is right, what is fair, and what is justice. So what happens is this. When an officer does something wrong, because the people expect him always to be above board. They expect a certain level of integrity. You tarnish the shield, and you tarnish it for everybody that carries that shield. So that's what makes it different, because an officer does something, it affects an individual, a community, a city. Mm. Whereas a guy selling shoes, he sell you the wrong shoe, and it's not the right size. You come back tomorrow, and you just exchange the shoes, and you go on about your business.
We're speaking live this morning with retired Justice Department Senior Special Agent Bobby Kimbrough Jr., who spent 30 years in law enforcement, talking about this Justice Department report about the Baltimore PD. Compared to 30 years ago, Bobby, when you first started out, as you said, how are police-community relations these days? Is it hard to compare because there seems to be more reporting of incidents these days?
There's truly more documentation, but I think that the relationships compared to when I started some 30 years ago, it's a lot different, because the police officer in your community, you saw him walking, you saw him talking, you saw him engaging with the people in that community. Whereas now, there's so much happening, there's so much technology that there's become a disconnect from the community. And that's what we got to get back to, more partnering with community groups, church groups, and things of that in the community, because they need one another. You can't have one without the other. In order to be effective in that community, you've got to have relations.
Yeah. Very good. Hey, thanks for sharing a few minutes this morning. Nice talking to you. Much appreciated. Bobby Kimbrough Jr. The book is called Surviving the Stop. He's a retired Justice Department Senior Special Agent. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning. Hey, glad you're with us. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. At Lexington Inns and Hotels, our highest priority is providing you with exceptional service at a great rate. Visit LexingtonHotels.com for reservations and locations. If you've never tied the knot, or perhaps are single because of a divorce or because a spouse has died, then your planning approach to retirement may be different from your friends and colleagues who are married. Ellen Jordan, Certified Financial Planner and Senior VP at Bryn Mawr Trust outside Philadelphia, has a look at how being single affects your retirement. Ellen, explain.
For a lot of individuals, it's more challenging if you're single, primarily because you don't have the support of a spouse. spouse's Social Security benefit. So when you both retire, you both have worked, you actually both receive the benefit. When one spouse passes away, then there's only one benefit for the surviving spouse. Now, if the other individual's benefit was greater, you can choose to take that. So that's one area where, you know, your challenge is that you don't have that dual income for a period of time.
Yeah.
There's also, obviously, you know, you yourself are only allowed to contribute a certain amount to your company-sponsored plan or to an IRA or some other retirement vehicle, where, again, if you have a spouse, they're also hopefully working towards the same goal,
right?
You know, save money for retirement.
Mm. We're speaking with Ellen Jordan, certified financial planner and also senior VP with Bryn Mawr Trust outside of Philadelphia. And we're talking about how being single affects your retirement. So I guess single here can have a couple of different definitions, right? You could be single your whole life, obviously, or you could be single in your later years in terms of how we're discussing this now.
Correct. And when it comes to single in your later years, I mean, you need to have working financial understanding. So in a lot of cases for women who, for a number of reasons, may not have had the time to learn about finance, it's an important time to get involved and understand what's going on and take more control of your finances so that the general anxiety of all of that will be reduced because
yeah.
you as an individual feel you have a better working knowledge. I always really recommend that, whether you're divorced or widowed or somebody else really just took care of the finances, it's, you know, critical time for you to take control of it.
Yeah. All right. So that's an interesting point with you being a woman talking about women here. Let's say we've piqued the interest of a woman listening here. Where do you start if somebody says, you know what, Ellen's right, I got to get cracking on this, I need to know this myself?
My general approach is really to try to help them understand that their natural strengths and the way they've managed the rest of their lives are absolutely a great way to focus on their finances.
Thanks, Ellen. Ellen Jordan, certified financial planner and senior VP at Bryn Mawr Trust. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Jordan, at campaign events in Florida and Virginia yesterday, Donald Trump criticized Hillary Clinton for letting the father of the Orlando nightclub shooter sit behind her at a rally and raised ethical questions about emails between the State Department and Clinton Foundation.
New emails come out. New emails. How do you think Hillary would feel if emails were never invented? Would she be happy?
A conservative watchdog group obtained the release through court order of 44 email exchanges that it said were not previously turned over to the State Department. The Clinton campaign has dismissed the new emails as having nothing to do with Clinton or the foundation's work. Meanwhile, Clinton says Trump incited violence when he said gun rights supporters could stop her from winning. In a rally in Des Moines, Clinton said Trump crossed the line.
If you are running to be president or you are president of the United States, words can have tremendous consequences.
Trump had suggested Second Amendment people or gun owners could take action against her. The Obama administration has denied a bid by two Democratic governors to reconsider how it treats marijuana under federal drug control laws, keeping the drug, for now at least, in the most restrictive category for law enforcement purposes. The DEA says it gave enormous weight to conclusions by the FDA that marijuana has no currently accepted medical use and treatment. And by some measures, it remains highly vulnerable to abuse as the most commonly used illicit drug across the nation. Carmelo Anthony and Kyrie Irving had all the answers in the first test for the U.S. Olympic men's basketball team. Anthony scored 31 points on the night he became the U.S. men's Olympic career scoring leader, combining with Irving for all of the Americans' baskets in the fourth quarter of a 98-88 victory over Australia. The women's team thrashed Serbia 110-84. And how about this for luck? A man who survived the crash landing of an Emirates airplane has won $1 million in an airport duty-free sweepstakes. Mohammed Bashir, a 62-year-old auto mechanic from India, found out he won the money on Tuesday. On August 3rd, he was among the 300 people who fled a burning plane that crash landed at Dubai International Airport.
Less than a week later.
Yep.
And he's cashing in.
$1 million.
It's probably not the recommended strategy, however.
What is that? crash land first.
Yes, crash land first, then go play the lottery. Wow, how about that? Good for him. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Mailing your letters and packages has just gotten a lot easier thanks to Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can mail and ship anything, anywhere, using just your computer and printer. No more trips to the post office, and it's so easy. Anyone can do it. Just click, print, and mail. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage right from your desk. Stamps.com does all the work for you. The setup is easy, too. In minutes, you'll be printing your very own postage. You'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, which includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in DEAL. That's Stamps.com, then enter the code DEAL. Again, visit Stamps.com and enter the code DEAL. Thanks for being with us. Could be some fireworks at the Olympics on Saturday when host nation Brazil plays rival and neighbor Argentina in men's basketball. There are leftover hard feelings from the 2014 World Cup, which was also hosted by Brazil. You may recall Argentina celebrated when Brazil was demolished in the semifinals, while Brazil cheered when Argentina was beaten in the finals. Meanwhile, early Olympic events have been marked by a number of incidents involving Argentines and Brazilians, from taunting to fighting. Two spectators came to blows at a tennis match Monday as Argentina's Juan Martín del Potro defeated Portugal's João Sousa. As security moved both men from the arena, the Argentine fan being ejected blew kisses and waved defiantly. Officials from both countries met yesterday to put together a last-minute goodwill campaign on social media between the two nations' athletes. The Wall Street Journal says the plan is yet to be formalized. Organizers said they were not prepared for the level of animosity thus far. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.